Today is Saturday, July 4th, 2026. You're listening to the World Socialist website. This is an automated narration. Years since the Declaration of Independence. Today marks 250 years since the adoption of the Declaration of Independence, which proclaimed that all men are created equal, that governments derive their powers from reason and the consent of the governed, and that the population has a duty to alter or abolish any governments that stand in the way of their inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The radical proclamation of universal human equality reverberated in the French Revolution of 1789, the Haitian Revolution of 1791, the revolutions of 1848, and the struggles for national unification and democratic rule that swept Europe and the Americas. It was in this sense that Marx, in the preface to Capital, wrote that the American War of Independence sounded the tocsin for the European bourgeois revolutions of the 18th and 19th centuries. The Marxist movement has always viewed the American Revolution, like the French Revolution that followed it, within its historical context. As bourgeois democratic revolutions, they could not realize the principles they proclaimed, except in the most limited sense. Most directly, in what would become the United States, the Declaration raised as a problem the persistence of slavery, which it could not resolve. But it set that process in motion, culminating in the abolition of slavery in the Second American Revolution. The Civil War, 1861-65. If the two American revolutions marked the ascent of the democratic principles proclaimed in 1776, the 250th anniversary is being marked under conditions of their staggering crisis and decay. The present government and the social order over which it presides are in every sense a repudiation of the American Revolution and of the principles that found their most profound expression in the Declaration of Independence. The words of the Declaration of Independence, like those of all great revolutionary documents, come suddenly alive in periods of social struggle. Its denunciation of George III, a ruler marked by every act which may define a tyrant, unfit to be the ruler of a free people, reads today like a condemnation of the Trump administration. As the historian Adam Hochschild observed in the webinar held by the World Socialist website on June 25th, the Declaration's indictment of the King reads as if it were written this morning. In the language of the Declaration, the military has been rendered superior to the civil power through the deployment of troops into American cities. Immigrants are transported beyond seas without charge or trial to a concentration camp in El Salvador. Federal agents are protected from punishment for any murders which they should commit, as in the cases of the ICE agent who shot Rene Good and the CBP agents who shot Alex Preddy in Minneapolis. The Declaration's statement that all men are created equal stands as an indictment of a society that has just minted its first trillionaire, Elon Musk. Nearly 1,000 billionaires command $8.4 trillion, and the top 1% holds as much wealth as the bottom 90% of the population combined. American society is mired in corruption and criminality, with President Donald Trump having reaped $1.43 billion in a cryptocurrency scam during his first year in office. The country that once proclaimed, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," commemorated the 250th anniversary of its birth with a surge of immigration raids. More than 10,000 people were arrested over a period of just 5 days, according to a new report in The Independent, as the Trump administration campaigns openly against the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of birthright citizenship. While the American Revolution announced a wall of separation between religion and government, the Trump administration recently released a 224-page report announcing that the wall would be replaced with a bridge. The wallowing of the ruling class and its state in filth and criminality cannot be attributed to Trump alone. He is the personification, the expression, and the outcome of an extended process. A globally integrated economy has undermined the nation-state system upon which capitalist rule depends. Monopolies long ago replaced the so-called free markets, and production has been subordinated to financial speculation and the accumulation of fictitious capital. American capitalism, in protracted decline relative to its rivals, has waged imperialist war continuously since 1991 in an effort to offset its economic decline through military violence. Out of this decay has arisen a financial oligarchy that has broken with all legality. In its operations within the United States, where it treats the Constitution, the courts, and the law as obstacles to be swept aside, and throughout the world, where it tramples on international law, waging wars of aggression and underwriting genocide. The repudiation of the democratic heritage of the American Revolution today takes two complementary ideological forms. The mythmakers of Trump and the far right drape themselves in the flag, invoking the names of American revolutionary leaders while dismantling everything they established. The official commemorations of the anniversary on the part of the Trump administration have consisted of sparsely attended festivals, a gladiatorial cage fight in front of the White House on Trump's birthday, and a traveling carnival of freedom trucks. The Democratic Party and its satellites deny the revolutionary character of the revolution itself in the service of the reactionary politics of race and identity. In 2019, the New York Times, the mouthpiece for dominant sections of the Democratic Party, announced in its 1619 Project that the American Revolution was a counter-revolution waged in defense of slavery. Given that premise, there is nothing worth celebrating on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration. The attitude of the workers' movement towards the bourgeois democratic revolutions of the past was summed up by Leon Trotsky in Results and Prospects, 1906. The bourgeoisie has shamefully betrayed all the traditions of its historical youth, and its present hirelings dishonor the graves of its ancestors and scoff at the ashes of their ideal, Trotsky wrote. The proletariat has taken the honor of the revolutionary past of the bourgeoisie under its protection. After the adoption of the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 and the Dred Scott decision of 1857, the only way the principles of the Declaration could be preserved was through a revolutionary struggle against slavery. So now the crisis of capitalism has reached such a stage that the defense of democratic rights can be carried forward only through a revolutionary struggle against the capitalist system itself. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is entirely bound up with the struggle for social equality. They mean nothing without the right to a secure and decent paying job, to health care, education, housing, and culture, to a life free of war and repression. Rights that are incompatible with the domination of society by a financial oligarchy. There are clear signs of the social and political radicalization of broad sections of workers and young people in the United States and around the world. Millions have taken to the streets in the No Kings demonstrations and in the mass protests against ICE murders. The class struggle is intensifying internationally. The critical task is to arm this growing movement with a historical perspective and a socialist program. The revolutionaries of 1776 did not petition the existing order. They overthrew it. The Third American Revolution will be a socialist revolution made by the working class as part of the world revolution against capitalism. That is the meaning of the anniversary and the living heritage of the Declaration proclaimed to the world 250 years ago today. U.S. court sentenced 15 Prairie Land defendants to 556 years in Trump's fascist campaign against left-wing opposition. Federal judges in Texas have now sentenced 15 defendants in the Prairie Land Detention Center case to a combined 556 years and 2 months in prison, one of the most draconian political prosecutions in modern American history and a test case for the Trump administration's campaign to brand opposition to Immigration Customs Enforcement, IC, fascism and capitalism as domestic terrorism. On Tuesday, seven additional defendants were sentenced to a combined 106 years and 2 months in federal prison. All but one of the seven defendants sentenced Tuesday had pleaded guilty, several of them cooperating with prosecutors in an effort to reduce their exposure to decades in prison. Nevertheless, every one of them received more than a year in federal prison, and most received many years. Inez Soto was sentenced to 50 years, Joy Gibson and Rebecca Morgan to 15 years each, Lynette Sharp and John Thomas to 110 months each, Seth Sykes to 6 years, and Nathan Bauman to 22 months. The scale of the sentences is extraordinary. Comparable prison terms are typically imposed in cases involving murder, attempted murder of police officers, child sex trafficking, or the repeated sexual abuse of children. The 50-year sentence for Inez Soto, a virtual life sentence, is especially appalling. She was not involved in planning the protest. She arrived separately and left when guards ordered demonstrators to disperse. She had already left the scene before former Marine Benjamin Song allegedly shot and wounded an Alvarado police officer. For this, the government branded her a terrorist and secured what amounts to a virtual life sentence. The six defendants who pleaded guilty before Tuesday's sentencing did so to a single count of providing material support to terrorists. Wildly different alleged conduct was collapsed into the same terrorism charge, from being present at the protest and damaging property to allegedly helping Benjamin Song evade arrest after the shooting. Nathan Bauman's attorney said his client was admitting only to graffiti, yet he was still sentenced to 22 months in federal prison. These sentences follow the June 23rd sentencing of eight defendants to a combined 450 years in prison. Benjamin Song was sentenced to 100 years, Maricela Rueda to 70 years, Cameron Arnold, Zachary Evitz, Bradford Morris, Savannah Batten and Elizabeth Soto to 50 years each, and Daniel Sanchez Estrada to 30 years. As in the first round of sentencings, the latest prison terms were imposed by two far-right Republican-appointed federal judges in the Northern District of Texas. Trump appointee Mark T. Pittman and George W. Bush appointee Reid O'Connor. The case stems from a July 4, 2025 protest outside the Prairieland Detention Center in Alvarado, Texas, an ICE facility operated by the private prison company LaSalle Corrections. Prosecutors allege that members of the group protested outside the facility, vandalized vehicles, and set off fireworks, and that Song later shot and wounded an Alvarado police officer who responded to the scene with his own gun drawn. The savagery of the sentences cannot be explained by the underlying facts of the case. They are political sentences imposed to create a precedent for treating opposition to ICE in the Trump administration as terrorism. The Prairieland case is the first major Antifa sentencing since Trump issued National Security Presidential Memorandum 7, his executive order targeting Antifa. Attorney General Pam Bondi's December 2025 memorandum directing federal prosecutors against left-wing opponents of the administration and the fascistic counterterrorism strategy issued under far-right operative Sebastian Gorka. Together, these measures provide the pseudo-legal scaffolding for a campaign to criminalize socialist, anti-fascist, and anti-ICE opposition as terrorism. The purpose of the prosecution is not simply to punish those involved in the Prairieland protest. It is to terrorize a far broader audience, millions of workers and young people who oppose ICE raids, concentration camps, deportations, police violence, and the Trump administration's drive toward dictatorship. The Prairieland case is the most advanced expression of a broader campaign by the Trump administration and the capitalist state. Across the country, federal prosecutors are using conspiracy statutes, terrorism language, and distorted claims of threats or obstruction to trample on the First Amendment and transform left-wing political activity into criminal conduct. In Illinois, the frame-up of the Broadview 6 collapsed only after extraordinary prosecutorial misconduct came to light. The case, brought against anti-ICE protesters outside the Broadview Immigration Processing Center near Chicago, unraveled when grand jury transcripts revealed that prosecutors had dismissed jurors who expressed doubts about the government's case and made improper statements in support of the charges. All charges were ultimately dropped with prejudice, meaning they cannot be refiled. In Minnesota, 15 anti-ICE protesters face federal felony charges stemming from opposition to the military-style occupation of Minneapolis and St. Paul. As is the case in Prairieland, the Twin Cities indictment was brought under the framework of NSPM 7 and targeted protesters who opposed Operation Metro Surge, even as the ICE and Customs and Border Protection agents who murdered Renee Nicole Good and Alex Preddy remain uncharged. In Michigan, the federal government has mounted another political frame-up against 8 anti-war protesters at the University of Michigan. The UMIC 8 were targeted in coordinated pre-dawn FBI raids across Michigan, Illinois, and Wisconsin on June 10th. A sealed indictment, later unsealed, charged all 8 with federal conspiracy offenses, carrying penalties of up to 20 years in prison. Their alleged crime was participation in protests against the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide in Gaza and demands that the university divest from Israel. Taken together, these cases reveal the emergence of a national system of political prosecution. The targets are not fascist militias or corporate criminals, but students, anti-war protesters, anti-ICE demonstrators, journalists, and left-wing activists. The Bill of Rights is being shredded with free speech, assembly, and association recast as evidence of conspiracy, material support, obstruction, or terrorism. The Democrats have responded to these attacks on Democratic rights with silence. The WSWS has found no statement from any Democratic politician condemning the 556 years and 2 months in combined prison terms imposed on the Prairie Land defendants. Nor have Texas Representative James Tallarico, New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, or other DSA-backed and left Democratic politicians responded to WSWS requests for comment. Their silence is of a piece with their entire record. The Democrats have repeatedly voted to fund ICE, Customs and Border Protection, and the Department of Homeland Security, building up the very agencies now carrying out mass kidnappings, raids, and political prosecutions. Even as immigration police kidnapped more than 10,000 people in 5 days, part of a major surge ordered by the Trump White House, the Democrats have done nothing to mobilize opposition. The trade union apparatus is no less complicit. The WSWS has found no statement from the AFL-CIO, AFSCME, the UAW, or IATSE opposing the Prairie Land sentences. Their silence is a signal to the state that the union bureaucracy will do nothing to mobilize workers against the criminalization of left-wing opposition, even as the same police state methods are being prepared for use against strikes, protests, and every form of working-class resistance. This collaboration is personified by Teamsters General President Sean O'Brien, who spoke at the Republican National Convention in 2024 and has worked openly to cultivate relations with Trump and the far right. His support for Mark Wayne Mullen's elevation to Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security underscored the union bureaucracy's alignment with the agencies overseeing ICE, CBP, and the broader assault on immigrants and democratic rights. The defense of the Prairie Land defendants and all those targeted for opposing ICE, dictatorship, war, and genocide cannot be entrusted to the Democrats, the Democratic Socialists of America, a faction of the Democratic Party, or the trade union bureaucracy. These forces are not allies but collaborators in the attack. The defense of democratic rights requires the independent political mobilization of the working class against both parties of big business and the capitalist system. Latest jobs report shows labor force participation dropped by 720,000 workers in June. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported Thursday that non-farm payrolls rose by just 57,000 in June, far below economists' expectations, and accompanied by sharp downward revisions to previous months' figures. Payroll gains for April and May were revised down by a combined 74,000 jobs. The headline unemployment rate fell from 4.3 to 4.2%, a figure seized on by the Trump administration to present the report as a sign of economic strength. But the lower unemployment rate did not reflect a strengthening labor market. It came as 720,000 people left the labor force and household employment fell by 507,000. The labor force participation rate dropped by 0.3 percentage point to 61.5%. Its lowest level since March 2021, with 720,000 people leaving the labor force. Household employment fell by 507,000. The official unemployment rate conceals the real scale of joblessness and underemployment. The BLS reported 6.0 million people outside the labor force who nevertheless want a job. Of these, 1.8 million were marginally attached to the labor force, meaning they wanted and were available for work and had searched in the previous year but not in the previous 4 weeks. The number of discouraged workers stood at 477,000. Another 4.7 million people were working part-time for economic reasons because their hours had been cut or they could not find full-time work. The broader U6 measure of labor underutilization stood at 7.9%, nearly twice the official unemployment rate. The sectoral breakdown underscores the narrow and unstable character of job growth. Leisure and hospitality employment fell by 61,000 in June, reflecting weaker than usual seasonal hiring. This is one of the clearest signs in the report of weakening conditions for low-wage workers. Restaurants and hotels, sectors that normally expand staffing in the summer, accounted for a major share of the losses. The decline in leisure and hospitality comes amid a mounting squeeze on working-class living standards. Average hourly earnings rose 3.5% over the year, while the consumer price index rose 4.2% in May. Energy prices rose 23.5% over the year, and gasoline prices were up 40.5%, driven by the widening impact of the U.S. war with Iran and the disruption of global energy markets. The attack on immigrant workers is also bound up with the worsening labor market. Foreign-born workers make up a major share of the workforce in service industries, including leisure and hospitality. The BLS monthly employment report does not identify workers' legal status, but its non-seasonally adjusted nativity table shows the foreign-born labor force at 31.9 million in June, down from 32.6 million a year earlier. The Trump administration's campaign of raids, deportations, and intimidation is aimed at terrorizing immigrant workers while intensifying exploitation throughout the working class. It is a mechanism for dividing workers, driving sections of the workforce underground, and strengthening the hand of employers. Separate layoff data show that AI is playing a central role in the corporate offensive against jobs. Challenger, Gray & Christmas reported that U.S. employers announced 45,149 job cuts in June. Technology led all sectors, with 15,503 announced cuts during the month and 139,156 so far in 2026, an 83% increase over the same period last year. Technology now accounts for nearly one-third of all announced job cuts. AI was cited as the leading reason for job cuts for the fourth consecutive month. Challenger reported that AI accounted for 14,029 announced cuts in June, or 31% of the total. So far this year, AI has been cited in 101,743 job cut announcements, roughly 23% of all announced cuts. Major corporations are openly using AI to slash headcount while redirecting resources toward profits, stock valuations, and infrastructure for further automation. Oracle disclosed that it had cut 21,000 jobs over the past 12 months, about 13% of its workforce, citing the adoption and deployment of AI. Meta laid off about 8,000 workers while shifting thousands of employees into AI-focused roles. Cloudflare cut roughly 20% of its workforce after reporting record quarterly revenue. Block eliminated 4,000 jobs, nearly half its workforce, with CEO Jack Dorsey declaring earlier this year that most companies would reach the same conclusion and make similar structural changes. These cuts are not the workings of an impersonal market. They are the product of a deliberate class policy. The financial oligarchy is using every lever available: AI, inflation, war, anti-immigrant repression, and the Federal Reserve's high interest rate regime to impose the cost of capitalism's crisis on workers. Financial markets treated the weak hiring figures as good news because they reduced expectations that the Federal Reserve would raise interest rates in the near term. Stocks rose, Treasury yields fell, and the dollar weakened after the report, while investors recalculated the likely path of Fed policy. The Trump administration seized on the positive payroll figure to present the report as a sign of economic strength. Acting Labor Secretary Keith Sonderling claimed the report showed positive payroll growth and credited Trump's policies with creating certainty for business. The statement ignored the labor force exit, the decline in household employment, the collapse in leisure and hospitality hiring, and the continued erosion of wages by inflation. Artificial intelligence and other advanced technologies could be used to eliminate drudgery, shorten the working day, and vastly expand the material and cultural life of humanity. Under capitalism, they are being deployed to eliminate jobs, intensify exploitation, and enrich a tiny layer of executives and investors. The June jobs report is a warning. Beneath the official unemployment rate, millions of workers are being pushed out of the labor force, forced into part-time work, priced down by inflation, terrorized by immigration raids, or targeted for replacement through AI-driven restructuring. The defense of jobs and living standards requires the independent organization of the working class against the corporations, the Trump administration, and the capitalist system they defend.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.